Welcome to the BiCast, podcast for the bisexual community. We continue in the vein of bi mental health with a look at a couple who navigated a complex shift in their relationship. This month's books by us is twofold, Hung in the Middle by Alana Nicole Scholler, and My Husband Looks Better in Lingerie Than I Do, Damn It, by Bobby Thompson. Hi.
Hi,
hon.
Hi.
Welcome.
Did I get your name right, your last name right?
Yes, done great.
Oh, good, because sometimes I don't always do so well. We are so excited to have you guys on today.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So for those who may not know, can you just tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Okay. Since I'm the one that likes to do the talking the most, and Alana happened to look up at me real quick, like, go for it. And I do have permission to use Alana's male name because, as I explain in my book, it was the male that I knew for so many years. And the name was Alan. Alan's family and my family were close friends. And then in the mid-1990s, Alan and I had an intimate relationship that lasted for approximately 3 years. And then we got away from each other. Our families were still close, and we still kind of knew what was going on with one another because we live in a small town here in central Kentucky, and everybody knows everybody else. So in about 2005, I started hearing these rumors about Alana and that Alan had changed her name to Alana. But whenever the male person would come to visit me or we'd see each other out someplace, I never heard from Alan anything about Alana. And I thought, well, must just been a phase, like a lot of people think about transgender persons. So then in 2006, I happened to see Alana for the first time, and she flirted with me. It just totally freaked me out. She flirted with me, and I told her, I said, look, let's get this straight. I can be your friend because I can be friends with anybody, but if you think that you and I can ever have a relationship like the one that Alan and I shared, you're crazy because I think you're a freak, and I don't want to have anything to do with you. Well, 2 years later, Alana and I were married. So if you want to know how I went from you're a freak to we were married, you'll have to read the book.
Yeah. I have to confess, I managed to do three chapters last night and a couple of Alana's. And, you know, I guess then we'll go with the thing that I can't really, you know, give out spoilers. But I'm really looking forward to finishing it.
Well, I'm good. And do you want me to tell you a little bit about your book, honey? Okay. And Alana's book is about having been born here in Kentucky in the 1960s, and the cover of the book actually is Alana at 8 or 9 years old when she dressed in her mother's clothes for the first time and realized that that fit, that was right, that's what she was meant to be, and mm-hmm. It scared her to death, and she hid the fact that she had such feelings. And so Alana's book talks about the risque life that she lived and taking chances, like not caring whether or not she lived or died, and having her first car wreck at 115 miles an hour and doing the bar scene and the drugs and the sex addiction until it was around early 2000s, I guess, when you were, what, about 35, something like that, that she really learned about transgender persons and that there were other persons like her. And then the book goes into what she experienced from learning about other people being transgender and beginning her own transition.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I'll admit, I got through about page 249 of Alana's book over the course of last night and this morning. And, you know, what I said off air was it's a lot of it's on the couch with her therapist and her really insanely crazy life and the daredevil with the cars. And, you know, I have a background in horseback riding myself. And so, like, and I'm from Maryland, so there's jockeys in the family. There are horse owners. So, you know, you're Kentucky, so you're the first race, we're the second race. but, you know, I think through all of it, what I got was that you really, like, wanted to go out in a fire and not really suicidal. Could Alana, could you talk a little bit about that?
I had a couple of times where, you know, it just, things were so overwhelming that cashing in the chips could have been real easy. But, you know, with everything that happened, and there are stories that didn't get into the book because it made it a miniseries, you know, and whatnot, but it just, I think the reason I survived the wrecks and a lot of things I survived was really because I didn't care, you know, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, if you have a drunk person have a wreck, odds are they won't get scratched, but the people in the other car a lot of times are they'll die, you know, and or severely injured. Because he is so limp.
Yeah.
And so every time, because I never wore a seatbelt, by the way, in them wrecks, there was no seatbelt involved. Basically, I'd go limp. When I'd realize I was in trouble, I'd go limp and just kind of, you know, just go with the wreck and let it happen and stuff. And I never was afraid one way or the other, you know. And so I think that really, really part of why I survived them. But as far as there is one part of the book, I don't know if you've got there yet or not, where I bought a car for the sole purpose of ending things because I found out it was the most unsafe car you could possibly own. And it was a Dodge Neon. You know, it's like a casket on four wheels, and it would fly. But it also would hug the road really good, so it was hard to wreck it. on a mission.
Should have gotten a Pinto.
Yeah. Well, I went on a mission one night in that car, which you'll tell that story in the book too, you know, and stuff. But, of course, I'm sitting here talking to you, so it's obvious it didn't work out. It worked out, you know, the way it should have, actually. But
yes. But, I was just going to say that all of us here can relate to the self-destruction aspect that we all go through. So we appreciate that you are still here to share with us.
Well, I appreciate it. I always wondered, one of the things I always wondered about is, you see, just watch it. Let's use movies for an example. And you see these horrendous car wrecks and stuff. Or like you're watching one like a car race and stuff. One thing I always wanted to hear was somebody that's fixing the wreck, which I've done it myself. The famous last words being, "Oh, this is gonna hurt." And they finally, if you've ever watched the movie Days of Thunder, they finally used that line in that movie. And I was like, somebody finally used that line.
Oh gosh. You know, I have to say, I'm so happy that you both are, you know, still together. You know, so many relationships fail in transition. I mean, my own relationship that I knew my ex 20 years, came unglued with this, and we're friends today. But what kind of resources and support were you able to kind of find during all this time?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I was made aware of Alana. And, of course, before Alana and I got together, it had only been just a few years since she herself learned about transgender persons, and she was going to the Gay Lesbian Services Organization here in Lexington to the transgender support group meeting and was learning about being who she is, but she was not living out in public yet. So when Alana and I first got together, I went to one of the first support group meetings that I attended with her, and that night I helped her get dressed to go to that support group meeting and was absolutely amazed at this what I thought was this beautiful woman standing in front of me, where I, up until that time, I had not seen the female, so to speak, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when I went to the support group meeting, there was an explanation that was given that night, and it's in my book as well. It's the Coke bottle explanation. And that helped me. That was the beginning of my understanding of what it meant to be transgender. Because in my brain, I saw Alana as a female and Alan as a male and thought of them as two separate beings. And it took me a long time to learn that it was only one person. So I think that unlike a lot of people who are married already and then the transition comes, Alana and I had the beginning point of transition together. And of course, about the only time that she would ever go out dressed would be to the GLSO meeting, or we would occasionally visit the a local gay bar or the church that we attended. She was allowed. Allowed's not really a good word. She was comfortable going as herself to the church and everything, but any other than that, you know, the public didn't see us. But once the book came out, the public had to see Alana. So it became so natural that now it's Alana. Just like I'm no longer this school kid that I used to be years ago, Alana is no longer that person that they used to be years ago. I've evolved into an adult, and Alana's life has evolved into what she is and who she is as well.
I like that explanation. I recently made friends with someone, and I only know her as a certain name, and someone else said her male name, and it took me back for a second. It was like a little bit of a shock. I like that explanation. It's the same person. It's not one or the other, right?
It took me a long time to learn that, to tell you the truth. One of the first, and I think this story is in my book too, I came home from work one day and Alana was standing there. No, that wasn't it. It was the day that I came home. I keep telling Alana she tried to trick me, because when she first moved in with me, she tried doing the man up thing again, which I think is also another experience that trans females go through a lot, is trying to man up. Ooh. So she grew the beard and all of this kind of stuff, and I came home one day and the beard was gone. And in my brain, I'm thinking this, oh, that's that Alana crap trying to come out again. I'm not going to be putting up with that stuff. She's moving out right now. I'm not going to deal with her. But I never said anything, never had the chance to say anything for a while. She held her arms out to hug me, and I kind of hesitated. And she looked at me and she said, honey, these are the same arms that have always held you. These are the same lips that have always kissed you. I've got the same level of education I've always had, and I can still change the tires on your car. And that was kind of like the beginning of me seeing that, oh, it is the same person. And and I can remember being in a party one night with Alana early in our relationship. And Alana's got this great charismatic, country, down-to-earth personality, and she just draws people to her. And so I'm sitting at the party and sitting back and watching her being happy and making everybody else happy, and I thought, well, you know, Alana's a whole lot like Alan. Alan's got a great personality, too. And then I thought, well, you dumbass. It's the same person. But it's amazing how I had to learn that.
So, Alana, there's also your long relationship with Mary and its failure. And I think, like, what I got was that she really wanted you to man up and grow the beard and do the man thing. And really, I think, like, from what I understand from reading, is that your relationship failed because you weren't just going through a phase. It was really who you were. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I met Mary when I was 19 years old and she was 25. So Mary kind of helped me grow up in a lot of ways. She went through a lot of when I was playing music in the bars and the drugs, and Mary went through a lot of stuff with me. And Mary put up with a lot of stuff. Of course, we didn't get married till I was 25 because I never wanted to get married. She wound up getting pregnant. Oops. And matter of fact, I wanted to name our kid Oops and she wouldn't let me. Mary was real understanding. And she gave me a lot of slack and a lot of freedom, actually. She knew, I told her before we got married that I didn't know if I could give up girlfriends and stuff like that. And yeah, I was up front with her, and I told her two things I'd never do. I'd never hit her, and I'd never lie to her. And so I'd go off and do my thing. Matter of fact, she'd try to get me to leave at times just to go out, because I'd be like a caged animal in that house. You know, I'd just feel trapped. She had a hard time when I come out as transgendered, but she tried her best to deal with it and stuff as best she could. In the end, it's what really, really got us, I think, was money, you know, which breaks up a lot of people, I think. But you know, that was the key thing that really caused us to go our separate ways, and we always wanted to go our separate ways. before we hated each other, you know, because we wanted to keep a friendship, if nothing else, and we've been able to do that. Matter of fact, I go and get her and pick her up at work in Lexington sometimes and bring her home, or I've taken her to work. Her eyesight's failing her. She's diabetic real bad and everything. But, you know, we'll stay close. Yeah, she had a hard time dealing with it, and she never would go to the bar with me. She never would go to a support group with me or anything like that. So she wasn't really supported now. The whole thing. She tried to deal with it as best she could, but she had a difficult time.
Yeah. Well, there's not a lot of tools out there for transitioning relationships to, you know, to fall back on. So that's, you know, that's unfortunate.
I'll also say that, you know, like you said, you never lied to her, but you know that you kept the biggest lie so close to the chest for so many years.
Yeah.
So do you think that had an impact, or you just couldn't do it?
That was a whole lot of what forced my hand, really, because, you know, when I realized that I had been not only lying to her, but lying to a lot of people, and lying's one thing I can't stand. I'm totally honest with everybody and expect the same from them, but my blood pressure really got backed up, and she threatened to tell the doctor, you know, if I didn't, you know, about my issues and stuff. And because the doctor same said, you know, blood pressure medicine wasn't going to fix the problem, because, you know, I was hiding something, and that was my issue, you know, as much as anything. Yeah. And so,
And I'll say that, like, reading your book, I mean, one of the things you did have was really good medical care.
I've been extremely lucky. When I lost my blood platelets, he's not in the book, but the doctor to help me get those back up was Dr. Pierce here in up in Lexington. And I tell you what, my mom would go with me, or Mary would go with me. If Mary was off from work, she'd go with me. But he didn't just tell you what the problem was. He taught you what you were dealing with and how we were going to fix it. And he was a good teacher, you know, as well as a doctor. And so when you left, you knew everything that you needed to know. Dr. Miller, set a world ski record back in the, I think it was the 60s, at 100 and something odd miles an hour on snow skis.
Wasn't that in the Olympics or something?
I think it may have been the Olympics. But and then his wife was mayor of Lexington, and so he was a really great doctor, and he retired a couple of years ago. And then my therapist, she was a former Miss Kentucky and a 10th runner-up in a Miss America beauty pageant. So, I've had some killer doctors, pardon that line, but I've had some really good doctors.
Marcy, of course, which is the name that we use for the book, for the therapist, she absolutely has our heart. She is such a special person, and we love her so very much.
Yeah, fantastic.
I can see that from reading Alana's book, how wonderful she was.
Yeah, we would get sidetracked sometimes and start talking men, you know. It'd be like the hubba hubba moment of our therapy session, you know, and I think she'd do that sometimes just to get me to maybe settle down a little bit. I might be getting a little excited or something. She would change the subject for a little while to reel me in, you might say.
You both are really honest and upfront in your book, and this is not an easy process to be that way, especially when transition happens well into a relationship for others. Do you feel this might have played a major role in your relationship surviving?
We both believe it's important to be honest in the relationship, and if not just in our relationship, we believe it's important to be honest in any relationship. And if we're going to have a relationship with our readers who are looking toward our books for how we handle things and the experiences, the things that we go through, if we weren't honest about putting everything in there that we've gone through, then how could we help somebody else that's really having those same sort of issues? And, of course, one of those issues that I, from my understanding of having made friends with other trans persons, is the desire for either multiple partner sexual situations, or just be able to have the experience to have a relationship, even if it is just a physical relationship, just to experience that physicality with a gender that you haven't had the opportunity to have a relationship with yet. So those things are part of many trans persons' lives who are friends of mine. So I can only assume that they're part of many trans other trans persons' lives too. So I think because that's a part of the situation, then we had to be honest about how we handled that situation too.
And that's great because, you know, to be honest, we all can relate to that, to all of that, really. Everyone can. And I think being honest about it is great because we can all relate. I mean, I guess it's the simplest way I can put that. And seeing how you dealt with it, you know, helps other people too. We all walk around with this self-imposed shame that we really don't need to. So,
well, mine, I kind of had that too because in my book, there's a picture there where I at one time weighed nearly 300 pounds. And being a fat Kentucky girl, people would treat me as if I had no brains, you know, because that was the stereotype. So, so I've kind of gone through a physical transition of sorts in that I had the weight loss surgery and lost over 100 pounds. I understand that. My feeling was I'm so gross, I don't know who'd ever want to go to bed with me anyway because of my weight, you know, but that was my understanding. So I understand a little bit of this people thinking lesser of themselves, but I've also learned that that is just so wrong. People are who and what they're supposed to be, period, and having this life experience that they're having, and at least I think that's the way it is, and the whole thing is the journey of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going off the deep end now.
I only read so far Alana's experience with when you first got together physically, and from then his perspective that you didn't really like were unable to open up sexually, and that there's that part of the book where you do begin to open up sexually, and you know, I really do think that our sexual health is a really big part of our overall health. But let me go back to the question I've missed. We're talking about your books and the importance and experiences that you shared so that you can help other people dealing with the same thing. But you've not stopped with the books. Can you talk a little bit about your ongoing work and activism and activities?
One of the latest things that I've done, and I was proud to do it, I haven't worked since 2008. And after I lost my job, I went on Bobby's insurance. She's retired state government here in Kentucky, and that started escalating to the point we couldn't afford it anymore. And right as I was fixing to lose my insurance, the Affordable Care Act rolled out. And I had talked to a friend, and my doctors and stuff were really expensive. And I wound up changing and becoming a patient of the University of Kentucky, and changing, most of my doctors have changed since, including my therapist and everything. But I wound up being put into the Ryan White program. The University of Kentucky enrolled me into the Affordable Care Act insurance, which I have Blue Cross and Blue Shield. The premiums were half of what I was going to have to pay if I stayed on Bobby's insurance. We were going on that, wound up saving us $1,000 a month.
Wow.
And to make things even better, the University of Kentucky picks up my insurance premiums, and I have no co-pays. I pay none of my medical expenses any longer. And so shortly after I got involved with that, the federal government decided they would like to do a video, and they wanted people who was, one, willing to show their face on camera, and
who's
two, people that was in the Ryan White program living with HIV and had enrolled into the Affordable Care Act insurance. And so I had the pleasure of being one of the people that was included in that video, which will be hopefully real soon posted on
I don't even know website. It's a government website.
It's a government website that it'll be posted to, and we plan on sharing that link as soon as that gets finished. Of course, I wasn't the only person that got interviewed. There was others, but
transgender representative. That was
so I was. I think I was probably the only transgender representative that was interviewed for that. But so that's one of the things. And then of course I was nominated and to the Trans 100, and so that was a big thrill. But yeah, the work never stops. You know, we keep trying to do. You know, anytime that we can do anything at all, you know, we're there. So. So it's a continuous process.
What's that name you call in Kentucky so it don't sound like Obamacare?
The Affordable Care Act, yeah.
That's funny.
A lot of people, you know, that's the thing. You know, believe it or not, there are people out there that believe that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act is two different things.
Yeah. They root for the Affordable Care Act, but you say Obamacare, and they badmouth.
I've had people say, "Oh, I'm all for the Affordable Care Act. I just don't want that Obamacare." It's the same thing. It's the same thing. But
well, you have that race in Kentucky, so.
But it's for your insurance, for you know, to make that change and save that kind of money. I just don't give what so many people. I believe that the Affordable Care Act probably needs to tweak. You know, I don't know that it's perfect, but for me and a lot of others, it's working and it's great. I mean, it saved my life. I mean, because without it, if I couldn't take my HIV medications, we all know where I would wind up, you know.
Yes.
And so it saved my bacon, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it really pulled me out of the fire there. So, but, you know, like I say, you know, maybe it needs a little work, but, you know, there's something on the table that can be worked with that's more than we had before.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
at least you're not dead. I mean, it's a big difference between being dead and being alive and having some problems with the program.
Yeah, right. And being able to put food on the table. I mean, saving us $1,000 a month, we can actually go buy groceries.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Back to your question about activism and everything. I personally am nowhere near as active as I would like to be. I think anybody could learn from my experiences. I know that experiences are different, and I think trans persons can learn from my book about our relationship and how it works, and I think non-trans persons can learn about transgender persons from reading my book. And basically, the bottom line is always, for me, people are just people. And I think that's a lesson that a lot of people don't know that could learn. And I would love to get out there somehow, like interviews like this, and we so greatly appreciate this opportunity to be active to help.
You know, I'm an activist, and I just want to say, be careful what you ask for.
Oh yeah, I've always heard that.
You know, the transgender violence tracking portal, just as a piece of activism, has consumed my life, and we have lots of volunteers. So just be careful that you know when you say you want to be an activist, you will probably get that option. It just may be everything you own and who you are.
Well, Allison, I have seen some information about your project, and it's kind of like I admire you and support you for the work you do. It's kind of like I admire and support the nurses who work on children's cancer units and stuff like that. But that is one thing that I would not have the heart to be able to do, because I would be crying all the time. I appreciate you and appreciate that you can do something so important there, because I want the violence to stop, and hopefully my way of helping the violence stop is by getting across the information that people are just people. But to work with what you do and to see the things that I on your Facebook page and stuff where we're connected, that I see you posting, it breaks my heart. I appreciate you.
Thank you. It, you know, it makes me think. It makes me think back to my own journey of transition. It makes me think back to the thousands of people, the hundreds of thousands that actually transition. And much like yourselves, I mean, I go out and do public speaking and I talk about, you know, what was my transition like? And what, you know, you guys are in the wonderful Kentucky South. I mean, that's not a simple place to transition. I'm in Jersey. We're fairly liberal around Princeton. We typically don't even have a gun in the town. You know, you're in the South. What's it like to transition? What advice do you have to folks who are transitioning specifically in hostile areas, or, you know, what can you share with folks? How to avoid the violence, how to protect yourselves, this kind of thing.
Well, you know, believe it or not, I've never had anybody show any sort of violence towards me.
That's great.
Yeah, one of my biggest fans is a deputy sheriff here in town. he's been to a couple of book signings and stuff, and I go in the courthouse. I mean, I'm in the courthouse. I'm treated well, really well, and everything. And everybody knows. I mean, like we said, it's a small town. I go in Kroger's. I've got fans in Kroger's, you know, that wait on me and stuff, and just read my book and everything. But the key thing was when I come out, you know, the words that I use, I think, helped a whole lot. And that's, you know, we can't force people to understand us, and we can't force people to accept us. They're either going to or they're not. You know, and I went into the whole thing with that understanding from day one. That, you know, there's going to be those possibilities are there that I'm not going to be understood or I'm not going to be accepted. And I accepted that, you know. And if I felt, when I approach somebody, it's almost like I get a feeling, yes, I can talk to this person, or no, I can't talk to this person, you know. And one of the key things, I was still on the horse farm when I come out. And we done business with a tire place here in town that was run by a bunch of real burly redneck dudes. And I would have to go in there from time to time to take a tire from a truck from the farm, you know, to have it repaired or whatever, or more tire or something like that. Well, I come home one day, and my father also would visit that place. And he'd come home, and he called me. And he said, well, I went to Cox Tire Store today, and they asked me if it was true about you being transgendered. And I told them, yeah. And he said, they looked at me and said, well, if anybody bothers her, they'll have to put a mess with us. So that's the sort of kind of support I've had here in this community, in this small town. So, but, you know, I've always told people, I've got something to say, and you may not understand it at all, but in the end, I hope you'll at least accept me for who and what I am. And it always seemed like it worked.
I think part of the success in Alana's transitioning here in town has to do with the fact, too, that we are such a small town, and that, as you'll read in Alana's book especially, prior to transition, Alan was part of the family band that played for the local fall festivals and for the boys that outchased the cops around town, you know, all the time and everything. So the Scholars are everybody knows the Scholars, so everybody knew the person. And I guess everybody else understood long before I understood it that the person's still the same person, so it's like it's no big deal. You know?
Yeah.
And like Bobby just said, I think with the police, they were just happy they didn't have to chase me anymore.
That's fantastic. I wish that it was that way for everyone, but unfortunately it isn't. So
no, and that just scares me.
Yeah. We need to support them as allies and as trans individuals to support each other as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions they'd like to add today?
Well, not questions, but let me tell you this one experience that we had. We had a transgender girl and her spouse come up from Tennessee to visit with us. It's been several months back, and they decided they want to go shopping. So we go to Fayette Mall, which happens also to be the place that I saw Alana for the first time, and so it brought back the not nice things that I had said to her. So we're walking in the mall, and I'm short, and Alana, of course, is so much taller, And so Alana and the other trans girl and her wife were about 2 feet in front of me, which is the way it usually is whenever we're out walking.
Short, as, I know.
Yeah. As they rounded the corner, there were these two girls that were young adults, probably late teens, early 20s, and one of them tapped the other one and said, "Those are men in a dress." And it just kind of ran through me, you know. And, of course, that's exactly what I thought when I first was introduced to the transgender world, that trans females were men in dresses. But for whatever reason, I had to tap her on the shoulder and say, "No, honey, those are not men in dresses. Those are trans women. Do you know anything about transgender people?" And she goes, "Oh, no, no, I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry." I said, "You don't have anything to be sorry about, because what you said was exactly what I thought, too, before I became educated on the subject," and handed her a bookmark. We carried bookmarks instead of business cards and mm-hmm. handed them out all the time, and handed her a bookmark and said, "This would be a good place for you to learn about transgender people is by reading these two books. And if you hear someone else say that's a man in a dress, you'll be able to explain to them that, no, it's not. It's a trans female." And then I turn around and walk off.
Good for you. Yeah. That's what it's all about. Yeah. Fantastic. That's great. Bookmark. I like that.
Yeah. I have to applaud you for that. I mean, doing that up north, you know, you can get yourself in a big, big spot of trouble. I mean, that's brave. I mean, I don't do that. And I've been on train platforms in New York, and people have said things to me, and I'm big. I'm 6'3" and not exactly light, and I'll look at you. But I mean, that's pretty brave. Congrats. That's props to you.
When Alana and I are out, I'll see looks every now and then. But, you know, what's a look? That's no big deal. And if I feel prompted, I mean, if they feel like saying something, and like Alana said, sometimes you kind of get the feelings of the people that you can talk to, and you know the people that you can't approach or anything. But, like, if they have just this inquisitive look about what's going on, I'll walk up and hand them a bookmark and say, "Are you familiar with transgender persons?" And that is a question that I ask. Hardly a day goes by whenever I'm around somebody that I don't ask that question. I had to have knee replacement surgery back in February and kept our books on my little hospital tray with bookmarks and stuff. And you know, all the clinicians and everybody that had come in and everything, "Hi, hon, how are you doing today?" And all this kind of stuff. And I say, "Are you familiar with transgender persons?" They can just be taking my blood pressure, and I'm asking that question, handing the mark, you know. And it's amazing how many people would come in, and especially once Alana got in the room, would come in and ask you questions and stuff, too. So I just, on my blog, on my myhusbandlooksbetter.com website, there's some information about some of the one-on-one education and stuff that I've done at different times. I mean, nobody's knocked me off my rocker yet, so.
That's a great idea. I want to get some of those bookmarks. Like I said, I recently have become friends with someone, and every single, we've been out like 3 times, every single time we're in public, they won't stare at her, because I think that they know that's a big no-no, mm-hmm. but they'll stare at me a lot. And two women that I will say I identify as lesbian, I guess, because they look like they were lesbians, or whatever that means, were downright hostile in their stares. I mean, they were staring me down like reacted by staring right back. But, I was trying to figure out why that was happening, you know. Were they deflecting, or I'm not sure. But, yeah, that would have been a good opportunity to walk up and hand out a bookmark, I think.
Well, we carry the bookmarks with us all the time, and whenever we go out to eat, when we get ready to pay the check, and she'll hand us the check, I'll say, "Honey, I would like to give you a gift," and would hand her a bookmark and say, "Are you familiar with transgender persons?" And, of course, the conversation goes from there. And I especially like to do that if I'm sitting close to somebody who has been doing the staring, because, as you can tell, my voice is kind of loud and carries, and if I don't think they're hearing what I've got to say, then I'll speak up just a little bit so I make sure that they do.
Yeah.
And I will talk my talk to this, to the server. And I have yet for anybody to hand me a bookmark back and say, oh, I'm not interested. Everybody goes, oh, how amazing. And, you know, all this kind of stuff and everything. And then the second thing that does is it's a physical promotion of our book, which qualifies as a marketing effort, which qualifies as that meal as a tax write-off.
Oh, yay. I think anytime you open dialogue, because I think the public wants to know what's going on, but they're afraid to say anything to a transgender person or whoever's with them, because they're afraid of just saying the wrong thing. And I think when you open that dialogue, it's like, that's fantastic, because that gives them permission to engage with you. So yay on that one.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know,
I'll just put in that I think for us, as you know, when we're part of sexual and or gender minorities, a lot of times we refuse someone being ignorant with someone being hostile. And, you know, I think for all of us, we've had our times in which we've had to face various kinds of abusive hostility towards us, sometimes violent, sometimes just, you know, being shouted at. And I think it actually requires some bravery. And I Bobby, it's like, you're a very brave person for doing that. But I think that it's really important because, you know, when people stare at you, sometimes it's just because, they're ignorant and they're trying to learn something. You know, and sometimes when somebody's staring at you, maybe they're into you.
Oh. I got to say about those two women that were staring at me, it was definitely hostility. But mostly, what I've been getting is just that kind of staring at, like, you know, trying to figure out what's going on, really, because it's something they haven't seen, I guess, before. I don't know. But, you know, but there's, so there's a difference. You have to kind of discern which is which.
Well, you know,
I just think it's sometimes hard for us to do that.
I'd like to add something here. Two events I was invited to. One was the book signing, Joseph Beth Booksellers in Lexington, which is was kind of spooky for me because you're talking about mainstream. You know, this is really putting it out there. You know, going to this place where you didn't know what you were going to be faced with, or people and stuff. You know,
yeah.
And the way you're set up, I mean, the entire public that's coming in and out of the store is going to hear you and they're going to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I actually had kind of some bad dreams about doing that book signing,
I bet.
And stuff. And so they weren't good dreams. And we went up there and I'd done the book signing, and it turned out really well. You know, it went good, no problems or anything like that. But, you know, it was one of the places that I thought, you know, if there's any possibility at all that I could be have a problem, that would be it. And then the other one was I was invited to take part in the Kentucky Book Fair, which is one of the biggest book fairs in the United States, I believe. And to get into that, you have to send them two books. They have to check them out and then decide. 500 authors try to get in, and they've only got room for 150. And so Bobby submitted two copies of my book, and lo and behold, we made it in.
Yay!
And then they told us, said, well, you know, we're going to tell you straight up, if you sell 10 books at the Kentucky Book Fair in that day's time, you've had a really good day. We sold 23, so we had a great day.
Yay.
And, you know, the really cool thing about that was when I got there, I found out that I was going to be seated with two lawyers. And these are older gentlemen, and I was about to freak out. I'm like, oh, man, there's no way this is going to work out. I'm sitting with these two guys. They're not going to be happy with me being at their table, you know, and I was just panicky. Wound up, I couldn't have been with two better people. Both of them bought my book, and, I mean, they were two of the greatest guys I could have possibly been seated with.
And didn't one start talking to you about having a transgender connection, something about Taiwan?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, over in Taiwan. But, so, you know, it just made for a great day. You know, and so the two places that I was most in fear of wound up being just a cakewalk. You know, nothing happened, nothing bad. You know, all my fears mm-hmm. were for nothing. You know, mm-hmm. and it was great, you know.
When you were talking a few minutes ago about getting the stares and not knowing whether it's hostility or into you, I relate to that statement because Alana and I were at Best Buy that day, remember? And there was this woman there that was just, she was really tall, at least 6 feet, if not taller, built like you wouldn't believe, and absolutely gorgeous and decked out. And I thought, oh my God, she's got to be a trans woman because GGs or genetic or cis or whatever word is appropriate to use, women just don't look like that. You know, she was gorgeous. And I tried so hard not to stare at her, but I kept catching myself. And finally, she saw me staring at her at one point, and I felt so bad mm-hmm. because I couldn't walk up and say, are you a trans woman?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. because I wasn't 100% sure. And yet at the same time, I didn't want her to feel bad because I was staring. But there was something about her that just, I could not take my eye off of her hardly. But I'd give anything if I'd been able to say something to her to make her feel better, because after a moment, you could tell that she was getting nervous over me looking at her.
I think the appropriate thing is just walk up and say, hey, I'm not listening, but man, you are gorgeous.
Yeah, I should have. But,
yes. Allison?
Yeah, we wanted to thank you guys. You're just awesome. You know, I've known you a little while, but you're just awesome. And thank you so much for sharing your story and everything, coming on. And I have to finish your book. I have to be honest, I haven't gotten very far. It's been kind of a crazy week. But it's coming. It's coming. I'm going to read all this now. Now you got me curious.
But, I hope all your listeners are curious, too.
Oh, they will be.
Buy the book.
Yeah, it's a great, they're both great books. Yeah, definitely worth it.
I actually have one last question. It's about terminology. And, you know, reading through Alana's book, the word that if, like, especially if you're an ally and you're on a trans site you can't use is transgender with the ED in it. And at least through, like, the first 200 pages, you use transgendered instead of transgender a lot. Was that a problem? Do you get trans people come back to you and say that's an inappropriate term to use? You also use the which is another
it's totally taboo.
Another problematic word among some trans people. So could you just talk a tiny bit about that before we wrap up?
Yeah, you know, it took me 3 years to write that darn thing. You know, and it changed, the book changed several times, you know, and but anyway, so, you know, as well as I do, that what's acceptable or not changes every day. I mean, you can't keep up with it. It changes so fast. So when the book started, that probably wasn't a problem. Now, probably was. But, you know, the thing is what each one of us feel and how each one of us thinks or the terms we choose to use, that should be up to us as individuals and what we're comfortable with. Now, you know, now I'm not saying that I would use that towards somebody if I knew they found it offensive. But if I will accept it, then I don't think that I should be run down for what I accept, you know, because that's my thing. That's not theirs.
Exactly. Exactly the answer I was looking for. You know, it's funny because I was doing some history research on some of the bi work I had done in the past. And like in the late 90s, early 2000s, I mean, transsexual and transgendered were words that we used openly, and we were working with trans people at the time, and that was not a problematic term back then.
No, no, and you know, none of us want to be judged, you know, for anything.
Yes.
And so it really irks me is when you have a group of people says, don't be prejudiced towards me, don't judge me. But then you turn around and you hear them judging somebody else or down in what they do or say. And it's not right. You know, it's not right. I mean, it's just like it's been a hypocrite. You don't want to be judged, then don't judge somebody else. Bottom line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we should all be free to have our own feelings. I can't live your life and you can't live mine, pure and simple. You know, I mean, we get to be who and what we are. We get to think the way we want to think.
Also, in writing that book, Alana's book, even though it was her story, the way that got written is she sits down and she writes out all of these memories and stuff, and then I took the book and did the editing, I guess you would call it, and typed the entire book out all three times that it was rewritten. And remember, I'm in the process of just learning about what is transgender to begin with. So I didn't know that you're not supposed to put an ED at the end of the word and stuff like that. And then after the book was completed, one of our friends says, you need to check into going to Southern Comfort Conference. And I'm like, oh, my God, they've got conferences for this stuff? You know, I barely even knew the word transgender, period. And so when we got to Southern Comfort, somebody said, oh, this something like this is Alana's spouse, she's a Gigi or whatever. And I'm like, Gigi? And they had to explain to me that that meant genetic girl. Well, I think we used the term Gigi somewhere, and somebody jumped all over me. Yeah. Oh, my God, you know, that's so outdated, and the word is cisgender. Well, I'd never heard of cis either. So I looked up cis and what it meant. And I couldn't explain that to you for anything right now, what that means. But I understand Gigi, genetic girl. So mm-hmm. I use cis, or I try to, now that I've learned to use it. But don't ask me to define it, because I can't. Look it up yourself, you know.
I'm with you. Yeah, I just came out last year, and all this language is new to me. It took me a couple months to really figure out, and I still sometimes don't know, what exactly cisgendered meant. And that's great. I mean, that's fine. It's just, I understand about the language. It's a process. It's a journey.
Mm-hmm. And as Alana said, it's continuously changing,
yeah,
and we hope
changing.
To get informed about the changes. But
I mean,
here
yeah,
in Kentucky,
no,
that
no
always
more,
happens.
Yeah, no more when we get out of the house and stuff. We don't always know that something has changed all of a sudden, and we're kind of back in the woods here, you know. And it's like, okay, so that's not correct anymore. And you know, talk about putting the ED on transgender, I think actually if you put that in the word, it shows it is a misspelled word if you put ED on it.
Now.
Hey, I'm country. I talk funny anyway.
Yeah, I had to learn how to spell it.
I think it's funny when people like challenge you on your own personal experience.
Right, yeah.
Right? That's a weird kind of thing. Like, you know, you come up with whatever terminology you want, and how isn't that not accepted? Because that's you and your own experience, not you talking second or third person about someone.
Right.
And, you know, the term... I'd never really heard that term before. Now, this is a non-trans person's point of view talking here in my experience. And when somebody first said to me, it was kind of like helping further my understanding of what a trans female, or the understanding of the word trans female, because it put she first and gave the focus to the person that was a female whose body happened to have male parts. That was my deciphering of the term So the term to me was an educational term. It gave me understanding of what's going on.
And don't get me wrong, I can see where some of these terms could be offensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of my key things is I choose not to be offended, you know, and that's my choice. You know, I choose not to be offended over all this stuff, because otherwise you just live 99.9% of your life in a state of pissed off, you know, and I don't want to live there. I'd rather spend my days being happy and not worrying about a lot of stuff like that, you know.
You know, though, there's another piece of this that really needs to be said, and these are actually slurs that actually do damage. And
right.
You know, the damage that we're talking about when you're using these kinds of slurs is not so much, hey, can we handle it? But we have a lot of victims that the last thing they ever heard were these words.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people that are injured with these words. So they're not words that we should lightly consider are okay. They're really not okay. We've got a lot of damage.
No, I agree with that. No, I agree with you on that. I don't think that those are terms that should be used, but
the reason I used in my book was because that helped explain how I came to understand. And I definitely would not.
That's one thing. The one thing that a lot of people didn't understand about Bobby's book is it's a book, you know. And you start, if you don't tell the truth, okay, this is the way I thought back then, then if she said, oh, well, since I met Lana, I started saying she, well, that's a lie. She didn't do this. You know, so you don't put that in your book. You write it the way it happened. You know, so, and there were some people that were kind of offended over certain things that she said in the book, you know, and what she called me, but, you know, that's the way it was. That's what happened. You know, and I mean, would you rather we wrote a lie, a fictitious book, you know, that's supposed to be a memoir about truth? That can't happen.
Yeah, and you know, the point here is that what she went through is what most of us go through is a process that you go through, and being honest about that, you know, because I know a lot of people are unforgiving about their reactions, and I think that if they understand that it is a process, and yes, other people do this, then I think that, you know, that's important. You know, you can't just, you know, come on and say, hey, I was Superman all of a sudden, because, you know, none of us are.
No, not exactly. It's just, you know, with these words, we need to have some great care and understand the depths of destruction that they've actually caused. And there has been a historical context to these words, but it certainly has been, this year especially, has been real problematic with language around trans and some of the slurs and slang that's been going on.
The absolute refusal to respect a community or a person's dislike of using a word, and just, you know, and not respecting that is an issue. So,
I
think it's also important that we reclaim some of these slur words, and, you know, I mean, like, we reclaimed queer for a while at various times, and, you know, queer was always like the word that got said by the person that was getting ready to hit you in the face.
Right.
But at various times we've reclaimed these words, and, you know, so it is like I'm kind of a linguist, so I like see that, you know, like especially that our beautiful English language and American English language is always in flux and changing. So, but it is a very big land with lots of landmines in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dangerous ones.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the big thing, you know, like you're saying, they call you queer right before they hit you in the face.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing right there is how the word is used. And
yes, exactly.
you can take a lot of words and make them bad words, you know, and just in how you use that word and everything. And so my point is, if I'm walking down the street and somebody calls me one of these names, is it worth me risking getting hurt over by confronting that person? Or is it better for me if I just walk away? And I just choose to ignore it and walk away, you know, because I will avoid a confrontation at all costs, you know, especially if it's a situation where I can get hurt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is where, just like the last factory I worked in, I mean, I heard some terms up there. Of course, usually when they were used, it was in jest, you know, they were joking and, of course, you know, cutting up. And so, you know, I didn't push, because I felt like there, with them joking with me and cutting up, and I would joke right back, that was a form of them accepting me, you know, and stuff. And I found out real quick that most of these people that were doing this was usually the first ones that would step up and defend me.
Because in the joking back, you kind of pointed out.
Matter of fact, it got to the point a new person would come into our area to work, and the first thing these guys would tell them said, don't bother that one, because you do not want to hear what comes out of that mouth if you do. Because I would just get really, really, you know, just, I wouldn't go off. I would just start joking right back, you know, and saying things and then embarrass the crap out of them, and then walk away and they'd leave me alone.
And saying things to them to make them feel the way that what their jokes had made you feel.
Yeah.
I was like, that was
And basically, it was basically taking the fight away from them. They had nowhere to go, so they left me alone.
All links will be provided on the webpage.
Okay, so remember, everybody,
you're not wrong.
You're not broken.
And you are not alone.
You're a human being.
And you are bisexual. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.
I bleeped a word that Bobby and Elena used several times. I do not censor our guests, but I do protect them. This word could be taken out of context and used against them to do damage, but I do firmly believe they have a right to answer critics about the use of language in their book. Thank you. I bleeped it out.
I'm a bit I say fuck or something, right? Oh, shit.
Nip it back.